And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode, is it 76?
Yes, it is.
Man, I'm actually struggling to keep up with these things. Episode 76 of the Fanboy Garage. Great to have you guys here. Hope you all had a wonderful holiday. We are just kicking this episode off right before the new year. So this is the last episode of 2019, which you will likely get in 2020. So first episode for you guys in 2020. But what makes this show so exciting is that we are bringing on two very special guests. One guy who's a regular on this show is Mr. Rick Hsu of the Batman on Film podcast. What's up, Rick?
Hey now. Kind of funny you say the Batman on Film podcast.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I haven't been doing a lot of Batman on Film podcasts lately until recently, and you were my guest, and we bantered, and somebody online said I interrupted you too much, so I'll try to do that today on the show.
Well, it's kind of funny because as we were prepping for this, we're like, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Hey, that's our I tried to explain this. I said this guy's from New York, I'm from Texas. There's not a lot of personality wise, it's the same level of obnoxious. I mean, you even opened your own show with yo, and it's like, hey now. It's jackassery at its finest, and that's because you and I are. That's why we get along so well.
Well, we do. You know, we're chums. We've met in person. We kicked the shit over artichoke pizza and in the village, and we had a good time.
We did.
Yeah. Our second guest, very very special person, first time on the show. I'd like to welcome Justin Kowalski of Let's Go.
Hey, man. Okay, first off, I stopped doing podcasts with Rick because all he does is cut me off, man. So I just said, forget this guy.
Wow.
I have something anecdotal to add to that. But
oh, man, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be on.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Good to have you both. So a little movie. We're going to talk box office like we typically do, but a little movie is making a impact on, you know, filmgoers and cinemaphiles and all those folks, and it's definitely stirring the pot with some Star Wars fans, and that is Star Wars Episode IX, The Rise of Skywalker. So, Chris, let's get into the box office.
Sure. So, The Rise of Skywalker obviously was number one again. It did just over $72 million, which was just over a 59% drop for second weekend. You know, it was a better second weekend hold than The Last Jedi, although caveat to that, because The Last Jedi second weekend happened to have Christmas Eve in the middle of it, so that was one of the reasons why it had that 67% second weekend drop that it did, even though people want to blame the word of mouth purely for that. But it's actually caught up, despite only having being $40 million less in its opening weekend than The Last Jedi was. It's only like $7 million behind through 10 days right now. So it held up pretty well. Yeah, throughout the week, it had the second largest Christmas haul, $32.1 million. The Force Awakens was one with $49.3 million for that. So it's actually done pretty well, although some of the indicators right now look like this thing's going to it's going to struggle a little bit. And the projections right now are that it may not even make Last Jedi money right now. And and just over $1 billion might be where this thing falls. But who knows? These things are volatile, especially these Star Wars movies in this age. So it's really hard to say, you know, what kind of legs it's going to have going forward.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in comparison to The Last Jedi, because I feel like word of mouth has been fairly positive about this, and a lot of people at least in my circles and on the Twitterverse have been going to see it once, twice, three, four, five, six times, and little me has only seen it once, but it feels like it's going to have more legs. Yeah. But you know, to your point, you know, these things could be a little sort of like let's throw shit against the wall and see if it sticks or not. And you know, I think it's it would be good if it goes out on a high note. But that said, I mean, the Disney has done some wondrous things with this with this franchise. Because who would have thought, Star Wars would be making all of this money?
Yeah,
well worth its investment. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, here's the thing: Star Wars is profitable for Disney regardless. I don't think they're gonna stop making like Star Wars films. Like it's. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like that notion's kind of weird and almost like ridiculous to even like suggest it, you know, when people, you know, when you're on Twitter and all that stuff. One of the things that and we'll probably get into this more as we talk about like Mandalorian and things is this IP is so like ripe to kind of explode in other like like avenues. So like even if this doesn't hit, like what do they make domestically? Like almost like 1 billion domestic for Last Jedi, right? Was right. It? No, it was like,
no.
It was Force Awakens. Huh? Yeah. So this one, so we're like, if it makes another 300, $1 million, cool. If it doesn't, it doesn't mean it's not a success, right? I mean,
thank you.
Sure.
I just don't get that. Like, why Disney's not in competition with themselves,
right?
Right. Like they're just, let's make some good movies, and sometimes other movies are gonna resonate more. That's, you know, it's fine. Like Solo and even like what Rogue One. I mean, I don't know what the final tally on that movie
was. 1.2.
Yeah, but it was considered successful enough to move forward with other stuff. So, sure. I just think it's kind of it's more of a, you know, a toxic fanboy argument more than like, oh, we enjoyed Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. And for me, it's twofold. Right. And I've been saying this for quite some time on BOF, my own Twitter, et cetera, that I want us to get away from this notion that the $1 billion mark is the barometer for success in a movie. Okay. Wonder Woman did 800 million worldwide. It was a huge success for that film. Mm-hmm. Like if it didn't quite hit a billion, but if that's now our barometer, then we're just going to ruin these franchises for ourselves. I mean, truly, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Secondly, now it's like the tide has shifted. And what we're saying now is, you know, 1.1, 1.2 billion. That's pretty weak for a Star Wars movie. Like, really? That's where we're at? Like, now we crack a billion, and even that is considered, like, a negative? It's really pretty insane to me. And part of the problem, the genesis for all this, I think, guys, because a lot of it is The Last Jedi, Disney, you know, toxic fandom. That's a big part of it.
Sure.
But let's go back to the what I consider the true genesis of this, is that you had Force Awakens bust out with over 2 billion. And so that's forever the frame of reference for the Disney sequel trilogy. And that's an impossible thing to try to capture that lightning in the bottle again. And The Last Jedi, by the way, dropped roughly 35% from its predecessor, which is almost exactly where Attack of the Clones and Empire dropped from their first films. Now, with that said, the third films did both Revenge of the Sith and Return of the Jedi did a little more than the second film. That might not be the case here, but again, it all goes back to that $2 billion frame of reference. And if The Rise of Skywalker ends at 1.1, 1.2 billion, and it's getting really good positive reviews online, critics hate it, but look at that audience score. It's like almost 90%. I think Disney's going to go, you know, mission accomplished. That's my idea.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, though, it did receive the, and I don't put much faith in this, but it did receive the lowest cinema score in the history of Star Wars, which is fascinating.
It did, but it was also like B+ versus A-. I mean, are we splitting hairs that much? I don't mean you, Chris. I mean,
because I've heard that like a B is supposedly a terrible score, which, you know, that I don't know, that illustrates like how great my high school, like, B's are all right, man.
I think the reason for that is cinema score functions on a wacky curve. So that's the reason why people say it. Like, there's only been like a handful of movies that have ever received like an F. So usually when a movie gets anywhere between like a C and like a B, that's usually not considered great, because they're gauging like opening night audiences only. And it's really more of a marketing thing. And again, see, one of my issues with cinema score is the same issue I have with like Rotten Tomatoes, and it's not even with the service itself. It's the way people continue to like misinterpret and use those things out of context to make like a point, right? So people say, oh, it got a B+, people didn't like it, or oh, Rotten Tomatoes, it's 50%, that means that, like, you know, critics hated it. And neither of those things are necessarily accurate, but I only threw it out there just because it is interesting that the word of mouth on this movie, and we could talk about this actually, because I think it's been fascinating. It's in my kind of post-mortem for The Rise of Skywalker, this is the thing that sat with me the most, is that the word of mouth for me on this movie has been really weird, because I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it the way they talked about the other movies. Now, I have actually not been on Twitter much, and that's a big part of it, but just in like regular circles, I've had more people talk to me about The Mandalorian than they've talked to me about The Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. Which I do think is interesting.
You know what's interesting, Chris? I was at my daughter's soccer practice earlier, and there's this group of dads I talk about pretty frequently online, and they're just my neighborhood geek dads. And we go to these movies, and these guys have no clue about who directed what, drama behind the scenes, nothing. It's exactly. Just they just love the movies, right? But I was talking tonight. I was like, "Did you guys see Rise of Skywalker?" And they're like, "Yeah, it's pretty cool." But then The Mandalorian, and they all start talking about The Mandalorian.
Yeah, yeah.
That happened to me an hour ago. That, true story.
There's some interesting stuff that's happening with The Mandalorian in comparison to the saga films. Like this show, and we'll get more into this as we kind of hit this segment. But it's transcended the idea of what Star Wars, who Star Wars is made for, right? Like I think Baby Yoda, the child. Has kind of like leaped into the stratosphere of pop culture and has become this thing that's been adorned by people who knew nothing of Star Wars, who barely know anything about this TV show, but have gravitated towards it. I mean, my wife, every time I literally forced her, like Jedi mind tricked her to go see a Star Wars film with me. And she has watched week by week with me on The Mandalorian because of the kid. And the story, I mean, obviously the story is great, and you know, we're expanding a bit more on mythology and things like that, and it's a little simplified. Like it's not all about the space battles and all of that stuff. Like there's a meaty piece of story there to chew on. But she's been all over it, and she's excited about season two.
It's a fascinating phenomenon. But just to tie in though, Rick, I want to throw one thing out at you. Because one of the last times we had you on the show, we were talking about what we thought the box office would be for Rise of Skywalker. And I think we all kind of agreed that we hoped, at least, that the movie would do better than Last Jedi to kind of follow along, right? And that 1.5 to 1.7 would be great, because we kind of wanted to put an end to like the whole conversation of like, oh, The Last Jedi ruined Star Wars, right, forever, which we don't believe, obviously. We're all Last Jedi fans. And but now if the Rick Aaron and myself are Last Jedi fans, but if the movie does do like, let's say, Rogue One numbers as opposed to even Last Jedi numbers, the franchise will have gone from that ridiculous high, right, of Force Awakens down to almost cut in half by movie three. Does that say something, though? It doesn't say anything over dramatic, like people want to, you know, Star Wars is done or anything like that. But what does it say, though?
Well, I would say this. Let's keep in mind a couple of things. This is now, correct me if I'm wrong here, gentlemen, this is the 10th Star Wars movie, correct? Or number 10? Solo, Rogue One, 10. It's also, is that right? Yeah, 10.
11.
Yeah.
Live action films. Oh, that's right. 'Cause there was 9. I'm sorry. This is episode 9, right? Thank you. 11. So, and let's face
12,
it.
12, right? Isn't the 12th film, right?
Well, we've had three trilogies. Is 9.
You could,
and then
you
the
put
two
Clone Wars in there, but that's animated.
We're splitting here.
Yeah. Well, whatever, right? So, and it's also the third finale. It's not the finale. It's the third finale.
Yes.
Because Revenge of the Sith was
the final finale.
Was sold the same way, and that had a little bit more appeal, I think, because people tolerated the first two prequels, and I personally like them. But you know, let's face it; those are the original contentious Star Wars films outside of the special editions. I think that what we could say, Chris, is that did The Last Jedi hurt the franchise, or is there just kind of franchise fatigue a little bit? Mm. And I think the latter is a little bit more fair, right? Now, let's see ultimately where it ends up. Now, you're right. I did say this. I did say that I'd love to see this trilogy fall in line with the other two, meaning the drop and then the increase on the third film. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. It might match the numbers. It's possible it hits 1.3. I kind of doubt it. So it's probably going to come in a little lower. But again, I now have to circle back to my original point. If we get to a point where it's a $1 billion film, period, right? And that's a negative, then, man, we're just beating ourselves.
Yeah.
We're beating ourselves up over this. Like, it's a $1 billion film is a $1 billion film, and fans love it. And
I mean, you said it. You know, The Force Awakens is such a hard – it's such a hard benchmark because it was a cultural phenomenon. It was the – you know, a moment in time where they were bringing back beloved characters. The marketing was on point.
Yeah.
You know, it just captured everything that I think people were missing in the, you know, prequel trilogy. And so they got really excited. It pulled in newer audiences, older audiences alike. And I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again. So to kind of, you know, to kind of compare these other two films against that is, I think, unfair.
It is unfair. And I've been doing it myself. Justin, what do you think? Because Justin, you love Rise of Skywalker, right? But not a big fan of Last Jedi.
Yeah. I think to bring it to like a real conversation, like I don't hate Last Jedi. There's a couple things with it that I don't care for. And I think they missed the mark with Finn's storyline in that film. And I think those are my big issues, but, what do I feel about, you know, box office or I don't care so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we put too much focus. I mean, I know we're doing like a little bit of an analyst on it, but I just feel like, what does it matter in the end? Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Because it doesn't vindicate the movie for me. Like, oh, see, it made more money. Like, so what? And even if it doesn't make more money, like the fans who love Last Jedi are going to love Last Jedi, and the people who love Rise are going to love Rise. And mm-hmm. that's all that really matters for me, except for like, you know, fun back and forth with buddies. That's fine. Like, it's good to make like little jabs, because there could be like a little personal like victory if you're just, you know, busting balls. But if it's just not an argument that really interests me, I guess. You get that? Like, I want them to make more Star Wars films. I feel like they are. You know, Disney's invested. I was at Disneyland like about 3 weeks ago, and I literally went to Star Wars Land. Like, they're not stopping, right?
Yeah.
they're invested in maybe. I don't know if I feel like there's fatigue either. I just think there's just way more, you know, in all of like, you know, especially in like nerd pop culture, there's so much to digest. And maybe mm-hmm. people are being a little more like picky with what they can get. I don't know, man. It's a number of different things that can go into it. I feel like this movie is doing probably what Disney's expected. And if it makes more, great. And if it, you know, lands just a little bit below Last Jedi, fine. But like you're saying, like Force Awakens was the thing that blew everything away, because it was the return, it was the characters. So there was curiosity, and it was like, this is the first Disney thing. Right. So it had a whole bunch of different magic going into it. This almost doesn't feel like the last, you know, it's the last of the Skywalker trilogy, but it doesn't feel like, oh, this, it's not like it's the last Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's the thing. I think, you know, it's, and they do it, they did it in the marketing. This is the end of the Skywalker saga. It's a very different situation when you're invested in, you know, 12 Marvel films, and you know Tony Stark ain't popping up in another film. So there's a finality to, well, yeah, we'll see. I think there's more of a finality to that franchise. To a degree with the Infinity Saga and all that stuff, versus, you know, there will always be some form of Star Wars for us to consume. There may not be, you know, the same kind of Avengers or the way that they've structured that particular set of films, that I don't think there will ever be stuff like that again.
Well, and also, if I may just clarify something here, and I'm not backpedaling, I genuinely want to clarify. When I say fatigue, and I meant to, Chris had a really great question. It was very fair of him to bring up my own point, because on your very show, I said, this thing needs to do 1.5, 1.7. I said that, and it was a mistake for me to think that way, because I was falling into the same trap I'm discussing now. With that said, the fatigue, I mean, more than anything, is not so much like people don't want Star Wars. It's just that now there's just so much. It's not an event like it used to be, and that's okay. It never will be again. But that doesn't mean that they can't keep producing great content and do billion-dollar films. That's still awesome. And I tweeted this the other day. I said, I don't think – and I mean this. I love The Rise of Skywalker. I freaking love The Last Jedi, and I love the sequel trilogy, and I absolutely – and I'm like head over heels for The Mandalorian. I'm like, Star Wars collectively has never been better.
Yeah.
After Chapter 8 and after my third viewing of Rise of Skywalker, I'm like, dude, I'm in Star Wars heaven right
but
now.
But yeah, I disagree with you, Rick. I do think that Star Wars is an event, and it is in The Mandalorian where it's kind of taken shape.
Because yeah, I agree with that too.
People have been tuning in on that show, and it is, I would never have thought that we would be where we are right now with a live action Star Wars TV show.
Cinematic event.
Yes.
I've been looking forward to, I love this idea that Disney kind of started out with a Star Wars film a year. Man, I was looking forward to it. Like, sure. I feel like it is an event. And I'm glad it's once a year and not, you know, three times a year, because it does feel special to me.
That's fair. That's fair as well. I mean, I think they just need to be a little bit more judicious in terms of where they're going to plant their seeds and what the stories are going to be. I mean, I think they've wrapped this up. I'm very, very interested to see where it goes next. Who's going to get their trilogy? Who may not get their trilogy? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And what, you know, folks like Kevin Feige will do with Star Wars at their fingertips, and what Jon Favreau, obviously he's done amazing things, but they're bringing him into the fold. So, you know, I'm excited to see what the next generation of Star Wars films will be, Skywalker or not, to be honest with you.
And does it need to be a trilogy? Like, can they just make really cool Star Wars films when they have a great idea? Yeah. Even if, you know, like, why have to, because then you're going to run into like the same potential issues you have, like you had this time, right? Where, you know, you're going to have to plan it out and, it, you know, are you going to be able to keep the filmmakers or whatever? Like, if somebody comes up with a really cool idea for a Star Wars movie, make it. It doesn't, you know, I don't know why everything has to be like a trilogy now for them. I think they've gone beyond that now, especially with the streaming service and everything. Just crank out great Star Wars content in whatever format it has to be.
Yeah. I think, though, what this sequel trilogy has shown us, though, is that they need a constant. Like, they need either one writer or like a body of people that are kind of stitching together a blueprint of a story and framework, or a consistent director to a certain degree. Because I think some things that were, at least in my opinion, were missteps were because things were thrown in, taken out, thrown back in, like, you know what I'm saying? So that's the, to me, that's the beauty of The Mandalorian, is that it's Jon Favreau wrote the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
But George Lucas, I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
I'm so sensitive now about it.
Go ahead. go for it. I know what you're going to say about George Lucas.
Yeah, George Lucas wrote and directed, you know, the prequel trilogy, and, you know, it is what it is. Look, Aaron, are you, may I ask you, sir, are you kind of falling into a little bit of your, I don't call it your own trap, that's not the right way to phrase it. You didn't care for The Rise of Skywalker, it disappointed you. So now you're looking at this whole sequel trilogy as all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and all of this is why it led to you not liking this film. And then little old me over here is like, I'm raising my hand going, hey, I love all three of these movies, and I really love this trilogy. I'm not saying that they're perfect and some things couldn't have been done better, of course, but I wouldn't do a huge overhaul on this trilogy whatsoever. You know what I'm saying?
I don't say that there needs to be an overhaul. I just think that there should have been some consistency in characters, because in my opinion, things feel all over the place when we get to the close of this trilogy.
Dude, my wife sat through The Rise of Skywalker, and you know how she looked at the whole thing? I knew it. I told you everything I told you about this and that. We watched The Last Jedi. I knew that was going to happen to her. It was all just part of the story. I'm like, is she truly the majority of people that go to see this?
Yeah, maybe.
And I don't know. I say that sometimes. I'm just being a smart aleck, but I don't know. But is she? I think she might be.
I agree. I would say, yeah, probably, because we all are in our own bubbles and we're having these conversations with each other. We know the ins and outs of what's going on.
Right.
You know, we consume probably more than the average Joe does about, you know, the canon and all of that stuff. So, yeah, it's great to be. I'd say it's great for her because she gets to really, really enjoy these films for what they are, you know, these presentations of art, and they don't need to go into the sausage making.
I'm going to see Rise of Skywalker for my fourth time on Thursday with the aforementioned neighborhood geek dads. I'm just so looking forward to that group. Just like, we're going to have some drinks and watch the movie, and they're just going to like it. And this is good. So, Chris, can I ask you a quick question on your own show? Because Justin and I are both host ourselves, and we can't not ask questions, right, Justin?
I'm biting my tongue.
I consider you a friend, and I follow you on Twitter, and But I really, I have no idea what your opinion is of The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, so you clearly haven't listened to our episode.
I did. I know. I haven't listened to that episode. No. And I do listen to you guys' shows. I listen to at least 60% of your shows.
Dude, it's freaky. Hey, that's better
than... I don't listen to everyone. I don't have...
60%.
Who has time? I listen to most of them is my point. I miss, you know, I'll listen to two or three and I'll miss one kind of thing. But Chris, what is your... If you don't mind me asking, just for my own context.
So I... You know, I've been conflicted on it. Like, I'm almost having, and I haven't rewatched it yet, unfortunately. I thought I was going to, so I can't confirm this or not. But I was having a little bit of, like, a Phantom Menace experience with it. Not comparing it to The Phantom Menace at all, but my experience with The Phantom Menace was when I left the theater, seeing it for the first time, I was like, oh, my God, I love, because I got so caught up in the moment of, like, Star Wars. And then, like, the more I thought about it, and then when I rewatched it again, I was like, I didn't really like it that much. So my initial feeling when I left the theater after Rise of Skywalker was, wow, I liked that. And the biggest thing for me was I avoided as much as I could before going in. The only thing I knew was that people were saying that, oh, it retcons a lot of The Last Jedi. So I went into the movie, but that was my only like expectation. And I think because of that, when I left, I was like, wow, I actually didn't think it retconned much of The Last Jedi at all. I think it expanded on themes in The Last Jedi and didn't expand on certain things, but I didn't think there was a lot of legitimate retconning of things. And that pleasantly surprised me.
Okay.
So I liked it, but the one thing that fell short for me, which is why I start to struggle with it, was because there were moments in the movie where... There were four times in the movie where I said to myself, oh my God, I'm going to cry now, and I didn't. And so the movie, surprisingly, because, I mean, like, I watched The Last Jedi as recently as, like, I watched it, like, last Thanksgiving weekend, not this past one, the year before, and I cried like a baby. It was, like, my eighth time seeing the movie. So kind of caught me off guard, and I was like, so when I left the theater, I was like, wow, I liked that. And then thinking about it more the next day, I was like, well, what was it that I really liked about it? Because there were things that I had issue with. It didn't hit me as emotionally as I thought it was going to. But, like, I had a good time watching it. Because I think part of it was that it just really captured, especially at certain points, that feel of, like, the old, like, movie-like serials that inspired George Lucas to make Star Wars to begin with. It was just a fun adventure. And I've tried to avoid as much conversation about it as possible until I kind of see it again, only because I feel like so much gets... I start to focus more on the negative. I learned a lesson when we were recording our podcast about The Rise of Skywalker. We did like 2 hours on it after we saw it. And the lesson that I learned was that I realized it takes more words to talk about things you didn't like about something than it does to talk about things that you do.
Sure does.
And because
like 3/4 of our
Rick knows that.
I give you restaurant analogies all day long on that. You go to Yelp when you're pissed off.
Yeah.
You don't go to Yelp when you had a great time. It sucks.
Yeah. So we all started off, except for Aaron, saying how, we liked it. And then we spent like an hour and 40 minutes talking about the things we didn't like about it. And then like 20 minutes talking about what we did like, even though 3 out of 4 of us said thumbs up. So, it's just a weird... So I didn't love it as passionately as I loved The Last Jedi because I think it's more of a shallow film. And I don't mean that in the most negative way possible, but, like, it's not The Last Jedi to me had a lot of depth and nuance and subtlety, and this movie to me was, like, it was kind of, like, it was just shallow. It was as deep as, like, a puddle in the desert.
I look at those... Oh, go ahead, Justin. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think it's okay to objectively like something, though. It's okay to find like criticisms in something you enjoy. It doesn't mean you don't enjoy it.
Right.
I think that's one of the things with fandom. It's like you either have to be 100% hot or 100% like, you know,
it's
cold
like Batman
on something.
Returns. I love Batman Returns. It's not the best
same.
Batman.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I adore Batman.
But I get what it is. You know, I get what is it the best? Is it the best like portrayal of Batman? No. But there's something about it I love, and that's what it is. But I think we get into these really weird habits. Like, well, I don't like this and I don't like this. That's what I would even say with like The Last Jedi for me. I don't hate it. There are parts I really don't enjoy, But as a Star Wars movie, it's Star Wars. I love all Star Wars, even the terrible prequels. There's stuff about them that I can enjoy and sit and watch and watch it through. And you're going to like pick on the things you want to pick on, right? But if as long as you can have fun with that in fandom, I think it's okay.
Sure.
Justin, yeah. I think The Last Jedi for you is Batman v Superman for me. I think that's a pretty good comparison. And I bash BBS online more. I like it more than I come across online because it's fun. We're trolling each other and stuff. But I think it's fair to say that's kind of similar.
See, yeah, sure.
You know what? It's funny for me. It is, I said it in the beginning. It's fine. Like the film is fine. There are parts of it that I adore, and it's the third. It's a lot of the third act. Where I'm like, oh my god, this is some of the best Star Wars ever.
You ain't lying.
But the thing is I think what'll end up happening to me is, and it's funny you bring up BVS because I do this with BVS, is that I skip around. Like when I watch it, I don't watch the thing from like start to finish. I like, oh, I'm gonna go to my favorite part. I'm gonna skip over this bullshit. Like this is retarded, and I kind of jump around. And I feel like I might actually do that with this film, which makes me so sad because I do it with Phantom Menace. I will watch the Phantom Menace and go, oh yeah, okay, that's
gone. And I'll skip that pod race scene, man.
Pod race scene is like complete. That's a snorfus.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Oh, we're in Naboo. Skip. Like, you know what I'm saying. I think that will happen to me, and that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart.
See it again. You gotta see it again.
I know, and I will. But you know what the thing is? What'll end up happening is I'll just go to the end.
No, you gotta go to the theater and see it again because I saw it the first time, and I thought it was a little heavy-handed on the fan service. I thought it was retconning Last Jedi. Chris made a good point earlier, and I saw it the second time. And not to say that some of those elements still remain. But dude, I'm telling
it's the last of the saga.
Justin, absolutely, no, absolutely. I'm talking like in my first viewing. I love the fan service. There was just some that was just a little on the nose, I thought. But in my second viewing, I was like, yeah, I don't think that way anymore. I just don't. It's pretty wonderful. And I want to read a tweet, Mayor, guys, if you don't mind, from our friend Zaki Hassan, and it caught my eye. And
yeah, he's not your friend. You don't like it.
Zachy likes me. But this is what Chris, this is kind of tying back into something you said a moment ago. But our good friend Zachy's son, other than Rose's reduced role, which wasn't great, I agree with that actually. I don't see anything else specifically retconning stuff in The Last Jedi, certainly not the Luke lightsaber thing. And Justin, that was something I didn't like at first. Now I love it. And even the Rey reveal felt more like a progression than an overturning. Amen. That's exactly how my wife sees it. That's how you can interpret it. And this whole thing, this thing wasn't planned or whatever. Oh, give me a break. Not planned. They had ideas and they were rolling with it. And if it works for you, it works. If it didn't, it doesn't. Right. And so if it doesn't work, then you can go back and try to explain why. Well, I'm sitting there telling you guys that this whole trilogy works for me. So what does that mean? Mm-hmm. They could have improv the whole damn thing, or they could have had every script written verbatim. And guess what? I still just love these movies. Mm-hmm. So anyway. I'll step off my soapbox now. I'm done.
That's
cool.
Star
Wars. I like Star Wars.
You like Star Wars.
Yeah, I was texting you guys pictures of my toys. Wars crap. I mean, I live and breathe this stuff, and it's
you're supposed to open them, dude. You're supposed to open those things.
Oh no way.
God, please don't even get me started. We were at New York Comic Con this year, and if I still had all of my Star Wars stuff, I would have been retired like 20 years ago. My God, I just cried the whole time watching.
If you would have sold them, you ain't gonna sell them.
I would have gladly taken $5,000 for a Jawa in a box.
Speaking of Jawas,
so
do it. Those damn things are all over the universe, man.
Yeah, apparently.
They've been breeding in other planets.
That is
the rabbit
thing about about the Mandalorian. So kind of switching gears a little bit. So they gave us Chapter 8, which was the finale of the season. And gosh, it was so beautiful. It was so great. I mean, you talk about getting emotional, and I was texting Rick, and I told him, like, dude, I legit, for no reason, just started like bawling. Right? No reason. No reason at all. Just it's the scene with IG-11.
Oh yeah.
Zipping on the speeder bike, just taking out stormtroopers, hops off that bitch, and just starts mowing people. And I literally just started crying out of happiness. I'm like, this is the coolest shit I've seen in Star Wars since Chirrut, like, you know, whoops some ass.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Hey, yes. Chris, just a quick side note. I find it really funny that I was told to watch my mouth before this show.
Sorry. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Aaron's, as we've gotten more into Star Wars the last few episodes, Aaron's...
Rick, don't F-bomb. Shit is fine, I guess. And anyway, that's cool.
And bullshit.
It's your show, dude. You know, it was my show. I'd have F-bombed already. Anyway.
It's hard for me, to be honest with you. Having little kids has helped me.
Oh man! Worst thing about me and Marty is parents. We're like the greatest parents on the planet, except for our mouths. It's terrible. Anyway, moving on.
So chapter eight, guys. I'll toss it over to Justin. Justin, what'd you think of chapter eight of the Mandalorian?
Yeah, similar experience, dude. Just seeing, I think IG-11 is like, one of my favorite like new Star Wars characters. Love it. Love him. And so I love this like nanny programming that he has. That scene was so cool because I almost like at the end of seven, you're kind of left without hope. You know, you have that. There's no hope. And then the beginning of this, real quick, the beginning of this episode is amazing.
Yes,
I loved it. I loved
Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis. Sudeikis. Yeah, he was great. But like, even I didn't know who was doing the voices. You know, at first, just this like making characters normal, like hanging out, just having this mundane conversation, but at the same time you're like, oh, now you want them to die because they're punching Baby Yodas.
Oh
right?
Yeah,
oh man, that part right there, I was like, what the heck, dude? Like, this is like you have that feeling. That's what was great about the storytelling, is you had a feeling that like, dude, they're gonna hurt this little guy, right?
Yeah,
you know, even though he's Yoda, and he's not Yoda, but he's the child, he can take care of himself. But like, my favorite part was them shooting and just missing.
Oh my god! Like, so good.
That was,
and
so
they both
good.
Like look at the he like looks at the blaster. He shakes.
God.
Yeah, but like, yeah, IG-11 coming up. That was, I was like, oh, that's right, Nanny Protocol. You know, like, so I got, dude, I was leaning in, dude. I was so into this episode. You know, and it's pitch perfect. And there's so many like great. You know, as you go back, you're like, okay, I know I said that. Oh, I know why he's doing that. You know, they're gonna pay off this, like, I don't trust droids and all this stuff. And so, you know, it was telegraphing kind of a little bit for me, but it still gave me emotions.
And Justin, I agree with you, but don't you think it was a nice turn? Because I thought it was very predictable. But when Mando's lying there and he's basically saying, look, I'm ready to die, I'm done.
But it was, right? But it was earned.
Absolutely. But he still didn't trust the droid even then after he had saved the baby. He was still like, go ahead and just get it over with. Like, what are you talking about? I'm here to save. Dude, you still don't trust me? Yeah. Right? And then he saves him, and then he sacrifices himself, the droid, and the Mando is all emotionally – like, that arc is serious, man.
And that's what made it great.
This is the biggest gift. I think Star Wars has never been better because I love the original trilogy, and damn it, I'll die on the hill. I love the prequel trilogy as well. But the greatest gift that the Disney era has given us, in my opinion, is gray. Okay? There's not good, bad, black, white. This is like heroes are struggling. And you really got it in Rogue One when the rebel fighters were like, look, I've done a lot of bad things, man.
Yeah. Dude, when Cassian Andor shoots that dude after getting that information.
Yes.
It's like, okay. I guess you're in you're into that kind of thing. You're gonna like murder somebody to save your ass.
Hey, but that's what shot first.
Of course
you
did.
Actually, somebody brought up a great point on Twitter. He didn't shoot first. He just shot. Because in the original film, Greedo didn't even shoot.
Oh, there you go. Let's shoot.
Yeah.
It's like So anyway, in The Last Jedi, that whole freaking movie with the whole theme was that, man, is that nothing is quite what it seems. Or, you know, people are struggling, people are complicated, whether it was Luke or that. I don't care for the character DJ. I will accept those criticisms. But I still love that whole thing with he and Finn on the ship where he's like, oh, you see the X-Wing. See, brother? See, brother? It's all a machine, man. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a great, like, these characters aren't black and white. Those stormtroopers, you related to them. They're just dudes talking. Like, and then you have to remind yourself, like, It reminds me of Inglourious Basterds, which I think is Tarantino's masterpiece. You kind of fall in love with some of these characters that are freaking Nazis, and you go, wait a minute, they might like puppies, and they have some funny moments, but these are really bad people, right? Yeah. Right? And that's what the Disney era has done for Star Wars.
Mandalorian is my this, and I'm 100% truthful. It's my favorite Star Wars thing. It is like I love it.
With you,
I believe. And
there's, you know, well, I was gonna say there's not spoilers here. I was gonna say there's not a single lightsaber, but there is. which, that was cool.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah, I think it was like that perfect. What they did is they hit the perfect tone. And like, look, it feels like Star Wars. The humor was right, you know. It just felt so like organic to the world of Star Wars, you know. Like when you play in the Star Wars play box, like the sandbox, you have to. There's rules, and Favreau knows the rules, he did such a good job of making this feel authentic to that world. Not, and it didn't limit his creativity or him being an artist. You always hear that, like, you know, director driven and all that stuff. But like, when you choose to play in a certain world, there are rules and there are ways you have to like make it work, mm-hmm. because it can't stand out so much that, well, this feels awkward. You know, that right. Gecko's, that's what some of my Last Jedi issues are with humor and things like that. Like, oh, that doesn't feel like it's part of the Star Wars universe. But what Favreau did, as you know, just like kind of shepherding this thing, he and I don't know his whole process. I'm assuming here and speculating, just because it felt very cohesive. Mm-hmm. Like nothing stood out of all the episodes. Nothing stood out as well, that was a weird one, or that didn't feel right. Like they all felt like, okay, this is an overall, like there was a plan. Anyways, really loved it in episode 8. Man, they but, ended. But
wait, wait. You see, nothing stood out. Bill Burr's Boston accent didn't. I'm not a stormtrooper, smart ass.
You know, same thing with what's his face? Oh gosh, the dude from Sons of Anarchy and Batman Begins.
Oh yeah,
he didn't bug me either, man. There's certain people that are gonna be like character actors that just kind of like dip in there, and you're like, that's who they are. Kind of like homeboy from Yondu. First in Guardians, I'm like, what? Where's this guy? He's freaking some redneck dude in space. But all right, whatever. You know, just go with it.
Yeah. Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's funny how I know some people that are, you know, fans that have not loved the sequel trilogy, but they have loved both Rogue One and The Mandalorian. And I always think, I think that that's interesting, because I do think there are parallels between the two, especially in relation to the sequel trilogy. But yeah, it's been fantastic television. And I love how this finale played out confidently, like the finale of a show that knew it was getting a second season. So while it ties up a moment in the show, there's still so much story left. There's still so many questions left, and there's an entire universe out there still. And I just loved that about it. So like, now I'm like, I can't wait for season 2, and I know I have to, but like, it's already like my most anticipated show of next year. Like, it can't come out fast enough for me. It was such beautiful Star Wars.
And Chris, what about these reports that we're going to be getting some, I don't know, the word was legacy characters or whatever. Yeah. What do you guys think of that? Like, who the hell is that going to be?
Oh, that's cool. That's cool as hell.
So Justin, apparently, and it's like from legit sources here. It's not from like, we got this covered. Yeah. That there's, we got this covered is garbage, people. If you're listening, garbage. Move on from that site, please. But anyway, in the next season of Mandalorian, there's supposed to be some legacy characters in the show. Now, could that be Boba Fett? Maybe. I doubt we see Obi-Wan, even though he is Mando.
Man, I thought Boba Fett was showing up too.
You know, and maybe he will. I don't know, but Mando's going to look for, I guess, a Jedi, or right?
Yeah, I mean, he has to go
the baby. Who's left? Obi-Wan?
Yeah, or some sorcerers, as he called
them. And I don't think that, and I could be wrong, I don't think that we will get a physical reveal of Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan again until they probably want to roll that out for his own show, I would guess. I could be wrong, but I don't know. But who?
Well, we know we're going to run into one of those, you know, Gamorreans.
Yeah, we saw the the maquette of that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was
the thing looked huge, looked awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was in itself. That's an interesting thing. Like, oh yeah, hey, season two is coming. We're confirming that. Here's a model of a Gamorrean. So
yeah, a Gamorrean who did like typically is like this short, stout, like Angry Birds type green pig, and this thing is tall and ripped as hell.
Yeah,
is that what Favreau tweeted out? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, he just had that pick, and so
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing that I'm loving about this show is that it is taking things that we have overlooked or just go, okay, that's what that is. You know, Tusken Raider, how do they communicate? Oh, well, through sign language. Like, that's cool. Didn't know that. You know, Jawas can kick ass. Didn't know that either. They apparently pop up in other parts of the universe. So there's like little things here and there, like Kubaz, for example, the character that we see in A New Hope that kind of rats that to the Empire that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Han Solo and all them are kind of running around.
Yeah.
So you get one of those in the first episode of the series. So it's, you know, it's just continuing to build, you know, the universe with things that we've already seen, but kind of exploring things a little further. And I'm like, I'm in love with all of it. I'm just eating it up. I mean, IG-11 is another great example because is it IG-88 is just seen very quickly in Empire, standing, you know, with Bosk and Boba Fett as a bounty hunter. And now we've got a full-fledged character that's like kicking ass and riding a speeder bike with a nanny pack on. It's just like,
did you care that it wasn't IG-88? I didn't have like an emotional attachment, but like that's what I initially thought. I was like, oh, because when you saw the trailer, I was like, oh, IG-88's gonna be in this, you know?
Yeah. And then no, you know what, I love that they've kind of taken everything and split it off. Like,
yeah,
it's not IG-88, it's not Boba Fett, you know. We're gonna see I forgot the name of the character, the creatures, the ones that Bosk is.
We
see a bunch of those, and they're bounty hunters as well. So, you know, I'm glad that we're not playing with characters that we're familiar with, because that is the biggest critique I have of Star Wars in general, is like, let's move on from things that we're familiar with. Let give us something that's new, fresh. Doesn't have to be Boba Fett. But here's the funny thing about the Boba Fett episode 5, episode 5 was the bounty hunter episode, like before he went on to break those people out. I think this is episode 6. There's a character that steps off and finds that that woman, that assassin.
Yeah, we didn't get any.
We don't know who that is.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, folks thought maybe it was Moff Gideon, but that was never confirmed. So I'm excited to see how that works out. And it better not be another Sopranos situation where Russian gets out of the trunk and we don't know what happens.
Let's though qualify something though. When Aaron says he wants to see Star Wars stuff that moves on from the things we already know, he's not talking about the what's going to be awesome Deborah Chow Obi-Wan series, since she directed like maybe the 12 two of the best episodes in this entire season, and she's doing the entire Obi-Wan show. So we know that we want to see, Aaron, right?
She's got me, honestly, so I was intrigued when I was a little, like, I was talked off the ledge when they said, okay, the Obi-Wan thing is going to be a series. I'm like, great, condensed. It's not going to be a movie. We're going to get maybe a little more fine of Obi-Wan. But the fact that Deborah Chow, now, who in my opinion is outside of Chapter 8, has delivered two of the best episodes in this entire season, I'm really excited to see what she's going to bring to Obi-Wan. Like, excited.
Is it confirmed that she's directing all episodes, and is it confirmed how many episodes that is?
It hasn't. I thought I saw somewhere that it said she was going to be writing and directing it all, but that could change, I guess, over time. I mean, Jon Favreau wrote most of the episodes of Mandalorian.
Obi-Wan's going to be 6 episodes.
6 episodes, yes. So there you go. Nice and tight.
Oof.
So she could easily write and direct all of those then, I guess, if she needed to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued to see where they're going to go with this.
Yeah, I think, man, listen, here, I'm going to ask a prediction. Are we going to see Maul again? And whether it's in Mandalorian or in, because we have the Black Saber, the that's, there's some Maul affiliation with that apparently, right? With Rebels.
Yeah, so that, I mean, first of all, that was a huge reveal.
Yeah.
At the end of this this season, which is now part of live action canon, which is great. And yeah, he does have an affiliation to it, but he loses the Darksaber to Sabine Wren, who is also a Mandalorian. And at the end of Rebels, she passes it off. I forgot the name of the character, but she uses it to unify all of the Mandalorian clans. So between that point, which is right at about the start of A New Hope, right at the start of the rebellion, something happens. So in this time period, something between the Empire and the Purge of Mandalore, and this is how Moff Gideon gets the Darksaber. So that to me is like,
what is that actor's name? You know my first
Giancarlo Esposito. Yeah.
Do you know the first movie that I fell in love with that dude in? The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great in that movie too. He's kind of overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great character in that film.
Mm. Yeah. Well, he certainly brings the Gus Fring you know, to Star Wars. But he was definitely he is a true villain, which is also great. And he didn't die.
And that TIE fighter is dope.
Yeah.
Well, that thing is in episode 7.
I was like, I had no idea they could do that shit.
Oh god, yeah. So good, dude.
Yeah.
This show is touching. It's got the right kind of humor. I will say this, Justin, some of the humor in The Last Jedi is a little off. I agree. Not all of it, but some of it. Yeah. I didn't really need that great scene with Luke and Rey from, say, Jakku. Oh, that pretty bitch is nowhere. I could have done without that moment. But still love the movie. Still love it. But the humor in this Mandalorian is just bloody perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And it's touching, and it's sweet, and it's gritty, and it has, like, when they were showing Mando as a child and he was being hidden in the basement, oh, yeah. I was like, man, that reminds me of Rogue One, right?
Yeah.
And I love when the Mandalorian is flying off with him, and then a Rick word here, Justin, you juxtapose that with the end of that episode, and he's flying off with the baby, and it has the same angle and everything.
Yeah,
it's just beautiful stuff, man. And it goes back to George Lucas's whole thing about Star Wars, guys. What is it? It's poetry.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All these things that they copy each other. No, man, that's like they're complimenting each other. That's
true. That's good.
What I thought The Mandalorian also did very, very well was it tied some of the stuff that often gets overlooked or is like kind of sprinkled as Easter eggs. From other bits of shows like Rebels, like The Clone Wars. So I think one of the important things to call out is the group of Mandalorians that save the Mandalorian were from Death Watch, or they were part of Clan Vizsla, which is the original, I'm going to totally geek out on you guys now. But Clan Vizsla was the first Mandalorian Jedi, and his family is the group of Mandalorians that actually end up saving the lead character.
Wait, so he's the first Mandalorian that was accepted into like the Jedi Council. He's an actual Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's where this all came from.
Yeah, that's where, saber is the Darksaber.
But who came in, because I read a little bit upon this, and I've watched quite a bit of Clone Wars, and I've watched a little bit of Rebels, but I'm not super privy to the animated stuff, especially Rebels. But didn't somebody come and steal it? Like it was some other Mandalorians that came and took it from the Jedi Temple?
So the Jedi took the Darksaber, I don't know exactly... I don't remember exactly why it was, but there was a falling out between Vizsla and the Jedi, and they attacked Mandalore and took the Darksaber. But then a group of Mandalorians took it back. Mm-hmm. And so it had been hidden. Darth Maul at some point finds it and uses it to attack the Emperor. He gets his ass kicked. He retreats to Dathomir, which is his home planet, and that ends up being where Sabine Wren of Rebels finds the Darksaber.
Right. Again.
And then again uses it to kind of reunite the
doesn't Vizsla fight Kenobi?
Yeah, he does.
In Rebels, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or in a comic. Just read it?
No. Vizsla fights Kenobi in Clone Wars.
In Clone Wars. Okay. Then I saw it. Okay. Because I remember that.
They end up becoming like hired guns for the Empire.
I went on a Clone Wars like binge about a year and a half, 2 years ago. At first I had problems with that show because I felt like it was changing a lot of things that actually happened in the prequels. But I don't feel that way anymore. And I also have to look at it as it's a different medium and they have to like fill content. And I'm excited. It's coming back. It's great. Yeah. Disney Plus is a godsend, man. It's fantastic. Yeah.
So now with season two on the horizon or confirmed and filming right now, any expectations, any hopes, anything you guys want to see?
I'll just say this. I just want more of what we're getting. I want this thing to continue being great. And I am the biggest gift this show has given to me was I, unlike you, Aaron, was disappointed even though I was so thrilled that Ewan McGregor was coming back as Obi-Wan Kenobi, that was the most important thing, right? But I still wanted the
movie. Dude, Rick he was so bothered by this.
Yeah,
dude.
I wanted the movie. And Justin, Justin and I have been on 1,000 podcasts together.
I was bothered
that it wasn't a movie, but the fact that Ewan McGregor was coming back superseded that eventually. Now, with all that said, with how freaking great The Mandalorian is, let's face it, man, this is a new medium. Star Wars has never had live action television, right?
Yeah.
And it works and it's so damn good.
It's beautiful.
I am perfectly content with this being on Disney Plus. Also, I want to take a break. I want Star Wars to take a break from cinematic releases just to get past the legacy characters and simmer down toxic fandom and just pick up new stories, right? Like let's bring this stuff home and make it real. Let's tell a Justin, what did you confirm? It's how many episodes and how long is it? 10?
It's 6. The Kenobi show is they're supposed to be like full hours. So you know, like Mandalorian was weird because it was either 35 or 42 minutes. You know, they never really. Yeah. But right. Like this is supposed to be 6 1-hour long episodes. So
we're basically getting 3 movies of you.
Yeah.
And I'll be
yes.
I'm
yeah.
I, you know what? Frickin' bring it on.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. And The Mandalorian has given me that confidence that they can do this, and particularly not just with the show, but also with its quarterback.
Yeah. Well,
Debbie Shaw.
Yeah. I would say The Mandalorian gave me confidence in all Disney Plus shows. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like even the non-Star Wars thing, I'm like, okay, so if this is the kind of the pedigree out the gate, what they're giving us in a year or two from now, whenever everything else starts hitting, like, I'll be happy.
I mean, there was no, you know, it's funny because as I was watching the show, I'm like, shit, the quality of this show, this series is amazing. It's so cinematic. I would have thought they cut some corners, you know, things kind of look.
Well, they did reuse stuff, though. If you like, I was reading some articles about it where they use stuff from Rogue One and some Solo. There's like, you know, just some of the creatures and stuff.
Sure.
So, I mean why
I'm
not?
I'm cool with that. Yeah. But in terms of like, you know, reinforcing the universe, like creating the Razor Crest as a ship and, you know, and the weapons and the evolution of his armor and all of that, that kind of stuff. I mean, it just looked really, really good. Oh, and I mean, the attention to detail, for example, you know, we are on a planet where the stormtroopers have been, you know, they're hired guns. And so their armor's degrading. They look like shit. And then Moff Gideon comes in with a badass TIE fighter and, you know, stormtroopers that look like freshly mint. They come like rolling off. And I'm like, oh my God, the attention to detail here was amazing. It's great. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, I didn't know what this show was going to be. I mean, other than the general plot and concept. The one thing I knew, though, was from watching Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access, I knew that if you put money into a show, even if it's on a streaming service, it can look big and cinematic because Star Trek Discovery does, and they spend like $3 million an episode on it. Wow. So I knew that it could look great, but what I loved so much about this is what just happened on this show. The fact that you could get super geeky about this and get real deep like Aaron just did, or you could be like my coworkers who would be looking at Aaron right now like he was speaking another language after all the things he was just talking about, but they still passionately love this show too, and they're not even like huge Star Wars fans.
They're like, oh shit, a samurai Jedi sword.
Yeah, but that's cool. Like, it's such a well-made show because it works for such a broad audience, and for like hardcore fans and just people sitting down who want to watch great television. It works as great television and works as great Star Wars. It works just across the board.
Yeah, I still can't believe that they were able to keep Baby Yoda a secret.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you it's know, why they didn't have any merchandise, like, unfortunately, but yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, yeah. I don't want Baby Yoda in May. I want Baby Yoda under my Christmas tree. And it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the budget, it's $15 million an episode.
That's amazing. Tremendous. That's amazing.
That's crazy.
That's bananas.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
and it's but it shows.
And when you think about these are short episodes, too. You know, $50 million bucks for like 30, you know, like you said, like maybe 35 minutes an episode on average.
Yeah, it just looks great, man. Like everything, the speeder bikes to like
the score,
everything in space.
No, just to me, the score,
amazing.
The score is fantastic.
Yeah. It is a treat every episode, and I gotta give it to Ludwig Göransson because he is scoring different pieces of music for every episode. Like,
it's great. I didn't like it at first. I can't lie. The first couple of
really?
Episodes,
I remember you and I were going at it.
I thought it sounded like Rocky IV music, which was fine because Carl Weathers. Hey, by the way, on a side note, hey,
he scored Creed.
Every time that Mando says Creed in front of
that's so I saw that.
The meme is like really not even a meme necessarily. Like, it's truly just stills from the show. You know what I mean? It's not like it's manipulated or anything.
It's just a creed.
He's just, that's so great. Oh, that tickles me to death because I'm such a huge fan. And Aaron, I know you are as well. And I know Justin is, and Chris, I think you are too, that we love the Rocky movies. To have Apollo Creed in the movie, our Star Wars universe that's a treat.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And he's doing a really good job, man.
He ages so well. Dude, 72 years old.
Bro, he is like, look, that guy, Carl Weathers and Eddie Murphy both. Because I was just talking to somebody about Eddie Murphy, some huge Eddie Murphy fan. And like both those cats, bro, they don't look like they've aged.
No.
But maybe 5 or 10 years, but that's over like 30, 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Or 30 years, 25, 30 years. I mean, it's just crazy.
I had to like remind myself. I literally like Googled it. I'm like, how old is Carl Weathers? Because Stallone is doing some wonky shit to his face. And then you got Carl Weathers here, who looks like he literally just got a haircut and was like, yeah, got some grays here, but I'm looking good. Then you got Billy Dee Williams, who's, you know, he's 80, right? The dude's old.
Yeah.
Looking good, too.
There were about five shots. 45. He was a spokesperson for that beer. There was about five shots in Rise of Skywalker with he and Chewie, and he's like, ha, 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 ha. And it should have been overdone and, like, I could have taken 20 more of those. I didn't care. They were freaking great.
Yeah.
God, he was so
I just good. Love the way he says Chewbacca. You're right there, Chewbacca.
Chewbacca. And he's the only one who says it in the movie. And give Leia my love. And he says that like, yeah, you guys hooked up.
I thought he was only with droids.
Hey, man, he was a Carbonite dude for a long time, man. So...
He was.
So, okay, what do you guys think about the kind of the reveal that they intentionally, because they intentionally put this show out on Wednesday before Rise of Skywalker comes out with the force healing. What'd you think about that?
Yeah, so, you know, that's the thing. So I we talked a little bit about this on our previous episode, but I love the idea of it, and I thought it was well done in the show. When it popped up in the movie, I was like, oh, okay, so this is a thing. When they started doing it, like they were throwing a hot potato back and forth to each other, it's like, all right, guys, chill out with that. It's a little much. But
I like that they kind of debuted it here, though.
Yeah, I thought it was really smart. I thought it was really, really, really smart.
Yeah.
To get people kind of like into the idea, and it makes total sense. I mean, Yoda says it in Empire. So, you know, I was cool with that. I mean,
It was a perfect way to tie into, because it wasn't, it was one of those things where they were able to do it and it wasn't like gratuitous. Like it was natural in both moments. And that's why it was great. Because you knew they were going to do something to tie in the movie. That's why they were, you know, releasing it on Wednesday, aside from avoiding the whole box office thing. But like there was going to be some type of a tie-in. I was hoping that it wasn't going to be like some wacky like post credits character thing.
Wall of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, but I thought it was perfect and great tie-in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it kind of calls back to like one of the earlier episodes. And with the child tries to touch the Mando.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. And I love all that stuff in Rise of Skywalker. I just do. I really do. I like the stuff with, I think that whole trilogy to me is defined by Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver. And they're amazing. They're amazing. And anyway, each one of those scenes was fantastic in my view.
Yeah.
But that's going back to Rise of Skywalker, a movie that Aaron needs to see again, please.
Yes. Yes. Going back to The Mandalorian.
Yes.
So one of the things that I am left kind of scratching my head, I'm like, do they create a special helmet and an armor for the child if he decides to become a Mandalorian?
Wow.
Oh, man.
I'm like, oh boy, this is going to get a little weird if he's like, oh, I'm going to stay with you, Mando. I'm going to become a whatever species my thing.
Yeah.
I just don't want to see Baby Yoda doing backflips. It worked for me fine in Attack of the Clones, but I don't need it.
Do you think that we're going to end up... Do you think they're ever going to name the species?
They have to. I think at this point... I mean, they've gone out of their way to kind of market it as the child, right? They're not calling it, obviously, Baby Yoda. So they've got to give it a name, because at this point it's just a big old question mark. Like I don't think anyone from Wikipedia or anything like that has figured out what the species is. I don't think it's ever been named. And George Lucas
never
made a comment that no, he didn't feel like giving Yoda a name of his where he comes from. A name. Yeah. So I want to see if there's others.
Yaddle. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We need a backstory. Everything needs a backstory now. I'm kidding. That was just my online fandom impression.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I wonder if they do, but then, you know, who's the person that fills in the gaps there? Is it, you know, is it what is the guy's Max the guy who was in the Force Awakens that just has a quick cameo, Max God, why am I blanking on his last name?
Is it the top of the film with Poe?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one who gives him.
Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know, is it him? Is that the person? Because I could totally see him being the one. We're all getting excited. I bet. Oh, Sebastian Stan's going to play a young Luke Skywalker. And it's going to be like.
Oh. Hey, I wouldn't be against that.
Yeah.
But I just don't care, honestly, if they do name it or not. I'm indifferent. Because I think it'd be okay to still have a little bit of mystery. Like he's a mystery enough. Like where did he come from? You know,
he's got to learn how to talk.
That's true.
He doesn't speak yet. He just kind of like laughs and does the baby coo.
I don't know if we need it.
Yeah, I think
you don't need him speaking.
Okay. No, we don't need him. Oh yeah, I don't want him to speak either.
No, I don't think I do either.
There's something cute about it. It's like, you know, when those TV shows and all of a sudden the kid starts talking, you're like, man, why'd they have this kid?
Shit, this kid grew up. Yeah.
Like, why did Jim Gordon's kid have to talk in the Dark Knight?
Oh,
gosh. He didn't do anything wrong, Dad. Do you think they pick up right where season one leaves off, or do you think they advance, you know?
I hope not. I hope it's kind of like how the movies are. You're kind of... You skip ahead a little bit, you get a bit of, you know, there's crawl space, get it? Yep. You get the crawl, kind of creates like, it just kind of sets you up for where you're at, you know, because I don't know if I need to have them like, let's go discover, you know, the first couple, you know, planets were I don't know, it'd be cool if they're kind of landed and established somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be great if the show evolves into like where... like this season, every season is like off season. We assume that life is happening and they're doing things and whatever, but like each season becomes like an isolated sort of moment in the lives of the Mandalorian and these characters where like it's about that one conflict or that one mission or that one crisis, whatever it is. That's what would be great if the show turns into something like that. And I guess depending on how many seasons it winds up getting, it'll determine how much we do get to see and find out about Baby Yoda. Because eventually, if it keeps going on for a while, like it's almost unavoidable to have to expand on that a little bit. But I don't think they have to if they keep it, you know, if it stays like 3 seasons, 4 seasons, something like that, they can make a nice little tight story without having to get too much into it.
Right, right. There's some interesting, there's some interesting stuff to think about. You know, where does this, because at this point, in the saga films and even some of the other stuff that we've seen, the story has been advanced. So we don't know where this character kind of lives, the Baby Yoda, the child character, if he survives, if Kylo Ren, Ben Solo is the one that murders him at Luke's Jedi Academy. But I'm interested to see how far this thing goes. And I'm also interested to see if the idea of Jedi, through the course of the show grows, because at this point, since it's only 5 years after Return of the Jedi, like they know nothing of the Force, they know nothing of Luke Skywalker and all of that. So it'd be interesting to see how the galaxy changes if they kind of skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's good.
Yeah, cool. All right, guys. Well, I think we're close to wrapping this bad boy up. Again, so much fun having you guys on the show. Really appreciate it. I'll give you guys a chance to give some plugs, and then we'll cut on out of here. So who wants to go first?
My plug is that I predicted that Harrison Ford would have a cameo in The Rise of Skywalker, and that we'd get Hayden Christensen's Force Ghost. We got both. Bing, bam, boom.
No, anyway. we didn't get no Force Ghost, dude.
That was Hayden. His Force Ghost, bro. He talks to Rey. It doesn't matter. Hey, is in A New Hope when Obi-Wan talks to Luke and says, "Luke, let go of your feelings." Is that this Force Ghost?
Yeah,
that's his Force Ghost. Oh, same thing. All right, follow me on Twitter at Shewrick, Shewrick, to tie something into my buddy Justin here, opening a new bar in 2020 in McKinney, Texas, north of Dallas, called the Elwood. And Justin's is our artist, you're our logo designer, our brander, our ambassador of what do you, yes, what do I call it? Yeah. Justin's doing my new bar logo. If you want to hear something with Justin and I on my political podcast, which I don't like to really push on these comic book pop culture things, but it's kind of a non-political episode. It ties into some of the toxic fandom culture we're talking about. And it's just go to Left Crew Politics and search for the Rise of Toxic Culture. And Justin's my guest on that show. It's a really good episode. In terms of Batman on Film, guys, we have a solo Batman film on the horizon. Principal photography starts mid-January. And the forte for BOF is solo Batman films. That's the genesis of Batman on Film. That's been the war cry from day one. And this is going to be right in our wheelhouse. So please follow us for all Batman-related news on the solo Batman, Robert Pattinson, Matt Reeves Batman film. That's all I got.
Cool.
I love Star Wars.
Yeah. Are you disappointed that Adam Driver's Ben Solo didn't get a Force Ghost?
You know, it's funny. There was a great interview I read today with Chris Terrio, and I say his last name properly. Terrio?
Yes, Terrio.
Yeah.
Terrio. Okay. That he and JJ were actually discussing having Anakin and Ben Solo with Luke and Leia at the end of the movie. That was a little bit of a debate. And they ultimately decided against it because they thought it would be more poignant for her to see her. She's taking on the Skywalker name, and she's basically seeing her mother, father figure, and Luke's bringing her to Tatooine, bringing Leia, because Alderaan is obviously gone, which, by the way, we didn't even talk about how what's her name is from Alderaan and Mandalorian. That's pretty rad. But anyway, and that he's bearing or she is bearing their two lightsabers, and that symbolism is pretty beautiful. I'm down with that. As much as I wanted to see Hayden's or Anakin's Force Ghost, the fact that he's there talking to her with Qui-Gon, with Mace, with a variety of other people from the Clone Wars and everything, I just thought that scene was so kick-ass. I wouldn't change a thing. I'm good.
Cool.
He also explains why. He also did explain why Rose didn't have as much screen time either in that same interview, which was interesting.
And because of Dominic Monaghan?
No, because he says that a lot of the footage and the scenes that they had for her involved her interactions with Leia, and then they didn't like the way the effects looked. They looked too fake, so they had to cut a lot of that stuff, the interaction between her and Leia.
I'm calling bullshit on that, and I don't like to call him a liar, and I just kind of wish he wouldn't even have said that. You know what they did? They sidelined her like JJ or like Jar Jar was sidelined, and quite frankly, whatever. The movie's great. Yeah. It is what it is. But I don't, Chris, do you buy that?
I said all along, when we had our episode, I was like, look, she wasn't JJ's character, you know? So obviously it's not something that you could tell that was the one thing where he was like, well, this wasn't a direction I was going to go in. This wasn't a character that I had actually planned. So I'm just going to kind of move her off to the side. I think that was really the biggest reason.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, give her a Disney Plus show and, you know, make her interesting. There I go.
And does Justin get a 10-minute plug like I got?
Go for it, Justin.
I only need 30 seconds. You can find me on Twitter at J_Rocca. Check out letsgopodcast.com. You can listen to Let's Go Podcast and Let's Go Comic Show. If you want to listen to me and Rick talk about how Motley Crue is just a ripoff of Guns N' Roses, you can listen to episode 47 of Let's Go Podcast.
Wow. One of the most fun podcasts I've ever had in my life.
So, yeah. There you go. Real simple.
Awesome. All right, Chris.
All right. So, of course, we want you to join the conversation. You can do that with us tweeting us at the Fanboy Garage. Of course, you could also find us on Instagram and Facebook at the Fanboy Garage. And you can find me on Twitter at RealSaleMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at StartingSith. Thanks again, as always, for listening to the show. Please do, if you like what you're hearing, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you're listening to us. And I just want to say thank you again to both Rick and Justin for joining the show, and hope to have you guys on again sometime soon.
Oh, anytime.
Would love it.
All right. Later, guys.